This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under Stewardship Resources or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a deacon and trustee seminar held on July 15, 2025 in Millersburg, Ohio.
So with that, also we have one other quick announcement. We have four of the five speakers up here. Richie was not able to stay for this session, and so he is not up here, obviously. And we're thankful for the other four that were able to stay and partake in this panel discussion. So the layout here, I am going to read the question, and I'll read the first question. Each of these speakers have been assigned one of the questions to be the first one to respond to the question. When that speaker is done, we'll open up to the rest of the panel to offer their input, and I'll try to watch the clock, and when either the clock tells it's time to move on, or if they're done, then we'll move on to the second question and repeat that process. So the first question for this afternoon is for Andy. How much should we emphasize tithing, either in general life or when giving financial advice?
Like many of us know that tithing, the word tithing, is not mentioned in the New Testament, but it was very necessary in the Old Testament because of the Levitical priesthood, did not own land, they had to be supported, and so that was why the other tribes tithed, so that they would have sufficient to, they needed things just like all the others did. And then we also realize that now in the new dispensation, kingdom work takes money. And you may have heard this little story about the dollar bill, the $20 bill meeting, having a conversation with each other, and $20 bill was just telling the others, said, I go to fancy restaurants, nice hotels, resorts, and I'm just having a good time in life. And the $1 bill just hung his head, and he said, all I do is go to church, go to church, go to church. And so it takes money for kingdom work. And to me, just because of the fact that tithing is not mentioned in the New Testament, we do have verses which relate to it. We have two verses in 1 Corinthians 16, not concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store, as God hath prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. I'm not one to say that, you know, it needs to be a certain percent. I think 10% is nice. When I was first enlightened on this, the verse in Malachi was used. That was when I first became exposed to tithing. It was a young married man. And that reads, bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there be meat in mine house. And prove me not herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. I think there's something to be told about having an organized way of giving. People are people of good intentions. Yes, I want to give. I want to give here and I want to give there. I think the storehouse here is the church. And I think if the church would, you know, if everyone would give 10%, possibly the needs of the church and the things that a church is involved in, the needs could be met. Yes, we have our, you know, benefit suppers, benefit sales, and so on. But you know, we sure make sure we're having a good time while we're doing it. Whereas there is something to be said about giving in an anonymous way in which the left hand does not know what the right hand is doing. And just by going by a percentage, God can bless however he wants to. He can increase that or decrease it, however, you know, in his, however he, see, whatever need there is. He knows everything. He's omniscient, and, you know, there's nothing that fails him. So I guess for me, I would, to answer this question, yes, I would encourage that tithing would be encouraged. And some people say you're not giving until it goes over 10%. I have no scripture for that. But at least if there's a percentage, there's something. And, you know, just doing it mentions here in 1 Corinthians 16 about, you know, on a weekly basis, there's something about being systematic that makes that things happen. Otherwise, good intentions, possibly, there may still be needs. Okay, I'll open.
Okay. Any of the other panelists have anything to add to that?
Thank you, Andy, for that. My dad was one that believed you can never outgive God. He had this saying is, I shovel into God's granary, but God shovels back into your granary, but his shovel is always bigger than yours. And another discussion we had once was, is the first amount that comes to your mind when you see a need, often stick with that. It doesn't take long to dwindle that down real fast.
It's also something to be said about when that paycheck comes every 2 weeks, you know, that you just take a certain amount out of that, put it in the drawer, and then just, you know, when the opportunity comes, give.
One comment I would make, and I very much agree with Andy's explanation, appreciate what you shared there, and it is for real benefit auctions, and there's a lot of things where we do have a lot of fun raising money, right? But I'm very encouraged by a local organization, Mount Hope Charities, is an organization that I work with a lot with my job, or I'm exposed to what they do, where people can anonymously give. I'm always encouraged by the amount of money that is raised in that organization, and that is all anonymously given. So I really appreciate that.
Okay, thank you for that. I think we will move on to the second question. This one is for Ray. How do you respond when the wife is contacting the ministry in secret to ask for help in their marriage, but when you meet with the couple, they don't open up, don't share much, and she has not disclosed to her husband that she reached out to you? Do you let the husband know that the wife has been crying out for help secretly?
So first of all, this is a very sensitive question. Probably at the beginning of the first, or maybe before the first meeting, is ask the wife even, is this information confidential? Is this high security information? And maybe even during the first meeting, is steer the conversation, try to steer the conversation to where the husband comments on the same subject or topic that the wife is referring to, and it opens the interaction to where it does not invariate anybody, to keep it calm, keep it. I would be very slow for sure the first meetings or two, maybe to disclose that the wife was reaching out. There is time for that, maybe in a later meeting.
All right, any of the other panelists have anything to add to that? All right, thank you for that. We will move on then to the next question. This one is for Marty. Financial advisor or church, who is responsible when a church member does not take financial responsibility?
We made the assumption here reading this question that there is already a financial advisor in place. So I'm assuming we understood the question correctly on that part. I guess my answer would be, if it's set up as I would expect it to be, the financial advisor was put in place by the church. So if someone is not cooperating or not taking responsibility of their finances, the financial advisor should be communicating with the church leaders on coming up with a plan of action or accountability, or come up with a way to either get more people involved or make, you know, come to an agreement on what needs to happen next.
All right. Any of the other panelists have anything to add to that?
And retired deacon, but what do you do when you get those phone calls? Is so-and-so a member of your church? I don't know if you've ever gotten calls like that or not. I don't like them. I know what's coming next. And so ultimately, the church is responsible for maintaining purity in the church. And when there's a church member who is not paying his bills, when there's a church member who is misbehaving financially, it is, in my opinion, and I just give it as my opinion, Marty, but it is the church's responsibility to step in and to try to assist in whatever way possible to redeem the situation. That's a few thoughts that I might have.
Maybe along with that, is there a way to, practical ways that the financial advisor and the church leadership can communicate and work together? Is that part of the problem? I'm assuming that with this question, that's maybe part of the problem, that there's a disconnect between a financial advisor and the church. Does anyone have any of you have any practical ways on how to maybe work together a little better on situations?
One thing that comes to mind, in our local area here, we have a committee in place that assists with situations like that. They do get involved if the member that's having issues has to ask for their assistance, and they will review the situation. They'll look into putting a support group in place. They'll work through the ministry and with the ministry. That's a resource that we have locally here that I have great respect and appreciation for.
Okay. Thank you for that. Our next question is for Philip. How can the Anabaptist communities avoid members going into business in a way that is not a light to those he does business with?
Yeah, I pondered that thought, and it's a loaded question. Not all of us are cut out to be business owners. I had no desire to be one. Very happy working for someone else. And I did so for many years until, quote, God just dropped this other business into our lap. What I didn't understand at the time was the freedom that we then had to be involved in mission work on a much deeper level than we had been before. But I was thinking of words my father-in-law told me wisely many years ago, Ben Koblenz. Some of you would know him. And he said, Philip, you ought to be involved in something that either provides food for people or shelter. In his mind, it was very clear. And basically, you're in business for the benefit of your fellow man. And there's another scripture that I thought of in the Bible, excuse me, where Jesus said, ye are the light of the world, and you are the salt of the earth. And if our businesses and if our lives cannot fulfill those basic tenets of scripture, those basic requirements, then I would say, please don't go down that route. I have people that come to our business. We've had some incredible conversations around spiritual things. My personal goal is that all the people that I do business with, both vendors and customers, have such a relationship with them that I could ask them to go with me to church, go with me to Sunday school. I don't have to have the biggest dollar, the last dollar. What I want is a relationship. And I don't know who submitted this, and that's fine, but how do you avoid members going into a business in a way that is not a light to those he does business with? Don't. That's the mercy side of me, not very much mercy. Just don't. It's not worth it. If your business cannot honor and glorify the cross of Jesus Christ and the separated life, don't go down that path. I know that was blunt, but that's me. Maybe some of the others have a
comment. Okay, anyone else have a comment? I was talking to someone at break time about accountability in our finances and our churches, and I think maybe sometimes before we make some of these decisions of starting a business, if we would open ourselves up to our brothers, hey, is this a good idea? Maybe that would be part of the answer to this question as well. Okay, moving on to the next question for Andy. What are your thoughts on a trustee member borrowing money from the person they are appointed to help? Andy?
All right. The rest of the question says, note, did you have a reason for not reading?
Go ahead. That's fine.
Okay. This trustee member had previously tried to get conventional loans and was denied, and I assume by conventional loans that he was trying to get a loan from the bank, and he was denied. So I see that as a red flag. And then also we know that in the scriptures it is taught between borrowing and lending that the lender is the head, the borrower is the tail. And here we have a situation in which a trustee member, as a member of the trustees, he is in to help, to give help. So if I may use the term head and tail, here we have the trustee as the head and the person that's being helped as the tail. Now, with the reputation or with this person being denied the loan, the conventional loan, very likely there was a reason for that. And very likely there could be some problems down the road in getting the payments made and that type of thing. And then you'd have a real problem on your hand, and which would make the person being helped, he would be the head, and the trustee would become the tail. And so I would highly discourage a situation like this.
All right, other comments from the panelists?
This is kind of the blunt side of me coming out here too, and I don't know anything about this question, but I can't help but ask myself the question, is this trustee member actually qualified to be a trustee member if he's in a situation where he's been denied and needs to borrow money from the person he's supposedly helping? Just my thought.
Okay, any other comments? Okay. Moving on to our next question. I'll probably try to summarize this one a little bit. This is for Ray. If you have an older girl in your church with no family, what is the duty for the deacon or the church? How much should they help out in paying for things and helping out? She could move to family, so there's no family in the area. She could move to where her family is but doesn't want to, and she is needing more help than what is being supplied. Should we help more or step back and have family let the family step in and help? When the family was asked hoping that action would be taken. Not much action was taken. So how much is the church duty here?
My first thought here was the SALT finance application applies to this one. We are responsible how we interact with those around us. If this is someone, an unbeliever needing help, we make ourselves a difference there. If it's someone looking for a free ride, there we would also make a difference. So let's say this is just a person that is wanting to be a member in the church here. This is a preference. Let's look at it in a way that we don't keep feeding the problem. If it's someone that's, if they could have a job and don't, we have a responsibility. Maybe find a job. We don't want to just keep handing them fish. Let's teach them how to fish. So our responsibility to this is let's not keep feeding the problem. But also the mercy side on this is there's people that have legitimate needs. And first of all, family comes first. He that does not take care of his own is worse than an infidel. We don't want to be in the way of family. So there's a lot of consideration needs to be put into this question. Pray about it. Seek wisdom from the Lord. But as far as a deacon's responsibility is, if there is a problem, let's not keep feeding the problem.
Okay. Comments from any of the rest of the panelists? Certainly some of those situations are difficult to work through. Okay, if there's no other comments, we'll move on to the next question. This one is for Marty. Is it advisable to have family or relative on a support group?
No.
Next question.
On a little bit, maybe. Typically, in a situation like that, by the time a support group is involved, a family's been involved too deeply already at that point. And that's why I would base my answer on that. I think it's by the time a situation escalates to the point a support group is needed, it's high time to have others outside the family involved.
So why would you say that? For the reasons for that?
Family communicates differently than what other people do, for one. More likely to maybe clearly speak their mind, more likely to have contention in conversations,
more emotional ties,
multiple reasons for that. But having other people outside the family involved creates a level of respect that might not be there on the family level, if I may say that much. So.
Maybe just rephrasing the question a little bit, can you think of any situations where it would be advisable to have a family member involved?
It's actually a good question. Some, I guess, in my experience and the people I've worked with and spoken with, nothing is coming to mind where that would actually be advisable, but I'm not saying that there's always exceptions to everything. And there could be, I guess I could think of maybe situations where a person might not be mentally stable, but they have come to really trust someone close, a close family member or someone like that. There could be situations like that where a family member might be a good person to have on the support group just for the relational aspect of it would be one example that comes to mind.
Okay.
it seems to me, too, there may be some value to a family member presenting to the support group maybe right at the beginning just exactly how they see the situation. But then after that, just remove themselves from once the support group knows what's going on, then just remove them from any decision making and that type of thing.
Okay. Any other comments from any of the rest? All right. Next question is for Philip. Is it wise to invest your money in American funds?
This question probably could have used a bit more clarification. The word American, we're assuming, is a reference to domestic versus foreign funds or European funds. But I'm thinking also that there is a family of funds here domestically that's actually called American funds. I'm not quite sure. So I'm a little in the dark as to how to answer this. Is it wise to invest your money in American funds? I'll just share a few thoughts. There are funds, mutual funds out there, and any of you who have IRAs or 401ks likely have some of your money invested in mutual funds of some sort. And there are funds that only invest in ethical things. There's all kinds of funds out there. So I'm not quite sure how to answer this. It's not wrong to invest money in funds, in mutual funds, from my perspective, but there are other places you can put your money. I think Anabaptist Financial is one of those places, etc. So if we're looking at American as in the country here in America, I would see no problem with that. But brothers and sisters, the best return isn't always the best. If you have funds within your mutual fund that invest in alcohol and tobacco and things of that nature, is that really, how can you stand before God and say, I accumulated wealth investing in those kind of funds? I think we need to be wise as serpents, harmless as doves. That's the answer I give. I have no idea how far I missed this question because I don't know exactly who gave it and what the impetus was behind it. But the man who had 5 talents did something with it. The 2-talent man, and notice what Jesus said about the 1-talent man. You should have taken that 1 talent, put it to the bank, and at my coming, I would have got my own with usury, with interest, invested in the bank. And so from that, we would say investing our funds in ethical investing, I'm going to call it, I would see no reason to say no to that. Maybe some of the others have a thought.
All right. Any of the other panelists have anything to add to that? And if we miss the question, you can come talk to Philip afterwards, I guess, and get the right answer. All right, then we will move on to our next question. This is for Andy. What should I do to keep myself from getting down under when it seems everything hits at once? Church, work, counseling, etc. Can anyone relate to this question? I think a lot of us can. All right, Andy.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I really feel for the person who submitted this question because I feel most of us here have been there, and we know how it feels. And I assume work, counseling, church, that family wasn't mentioned, but I assume this is maybe a father who has a family at home. I guess it could be possibly a father. My first thought went to Moses, when Moses was just running himself ragged in listening to the problems of the people from morning till evening. And then his father-in-law came on the scene, and he saw what was happening, and he just had some real practical advice for his son-in-law. He told him, you know, we'd say today, delegate. Just delegate out to others. You know, you have men here who are capable of handling the easier questions, and then, you know, just the real hard questions, and I'm really paraphrasing this, Moses, just the real hard questions are for you. You know, Moses, he submitted to that. He took the advice of a younger man, and as far as we know, that worked. But yes, I would really encourage this person to get some help, you know, delegate some of your responsibilities out. Maybe at work you could take a position that wouldn't be quite as stressful. Counseling as well. There are plenty of people around who have the gift to counsel people. Either bring them in, or it's not easy to hand a person over to someone else. But bring some others in, get a support group for yourself so that you can go to someone, get some advice, you know, how you should handle some of the things that are, you know, coming up. In church, you have, you know, I know you have your responsibilities there. And again, I would really encourage this person to reach out and get help from your fellow brothers and or delegate.
Okay. Other comments?
By way of encouragement on that, the Bible often says it came to pass. It's not always going to be like it is now.
Go ahead.
Maybe another comment on that, and I agree with what's been said. But Jesus himself said, come apart and rest a while. Someone has said, come apart before you fly apart. And there's a need for that. And it's humiliating in a sense to recognize that these situations are more than I can handle. We want to be macho. We're tough. We're men. We can handle it. Do you know that you minister best out of a full heart? When your reserves of emotion are depleted, you don't have much to give to someone else. And those things happen. There's been times I didn't want to see anybody's face. I was whooped. I was done. But when we come apart and we rest a while, we spend time in the presence of the one who made us, who knows us, who can refresh us. I have a motto in my wall, right in my office, that talks about refreshing and regenerating and renewing, and just a lot of R words. We minister best out of a full heart. And we need to recognize, and our spouses need to remind us of that. So whoever submitted this question, you don't have to do all the work. You weren't designed to do all the work. You just weren't, much as you'd like to. We have limits. Some have further limits than others, but we must recognize our limits. There are times when I need to get away. I need to sit on the gator in the back of the woods. I don't want to see another face. And there I worship. Sometimes it takes a vacation to renew, to refresh, and then come back reinvigorated to serve the one who has saved me, saved my soul.
Any other comments? I think sometimes, if I could just make one quick comment, sometimes we look at the our church responsibilities, work responsibilities, family, personal, those four things, and we look at it like a balancing scale, and they're opposite. They're constantly in battle of each other. But if we can think of it more as how can we merge these together, and they're all part of our life, and how can we make that all blend together? All right, thank you for that. Our next question is for Ray. How should we advise people when they ask about co-signing for loans? And we took this, it could be, how could How should we advise people if they are asking us to co-sign, or if they're asking us, should I be co-signing for someone else? I think it's probably the same answer either way.
That's a good question for our sons, our children, and especially biblical accountability. If we co-sign, Solomon gives us advice on that. He says, "My son, if thou be surety for thy friend, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger, thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. Thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Do this now, my son, and deliver thyself." And he goes on there, but know this, that when we sign for this, we are responsible. You can't wiggle your way out anymore. So it's how to advise is if we are, we can do that, but there is accountability, and it puts us in a vulnerable situation. So it's necessary to do some homework, background check, whatever, ahead of time.
Okay. Any other comments from the rest of the panelists?
If this would happen to be outside of the family, I think we should not co-sign for more than what we can afford to lose.
Someone has said that the definition of a distant relative is one to whom you owe money. It changes the dynamics.
Okay. Any other comments? All right. If not, we'll move on to the next question for Marty. If a family in church has financial issues and a support group in place, should the church force the family to hand over the finances, or if they decline, offer to help, what should we do?
Looking at that question, the first term that comes to mind is tough love. We are here to help, a church family especially. It's our responsibility as church leaders to help. But the question we need to ask ourselves in a case like this is, at what point are we actually helping them if we keep giving them money or offering assistance where it's needed? And to go back to the question, just to have a clear understanding of this, should church force the family to hand over finances, or if they decline, offer the help? You know, what is the proper thing to do? I guess my thought would be, in some experience I've had with this, if a church needs to help with finances and a person is not willing to have other people involved or hand over their finances or submit to a support group or whatever the case might be, they are probably not at the point yet where they need to be. If a family chooses to deny all that help and the church continues to offer assistance, we really aren't helping them. We're helping them get in deeper. But if we hold them accountable or we let the situation escalate to where they actually ask for help and they're ready to submit to a support group or whatever, at that point, a church can effectively help someone.
Okay, any other comments?
AF does have advisors. Thank you for being here, Gary.
Any other comments? All right. We have one more question to wrap this up with. This is in relation to Richie's, this is for Philip to answer first, and it's in relation to Richie's topic on time and structure in meetings. Do you have practical pointers for meetings when coming alongside people who are struggling in relationships and or marriage to keep meetings on schedule when it is time to go home before you get to the root of the problem? Where is the balance between providing leadership to maintain a schedule and being open and having time to listen?
That is a very delicate question. And as soon as I heard it read upstairs where we were meeting, I said, there's two issues here. You have, if I understand the question correctly, we have a business meeting, or there's some kind of a meeting that's been scheduled to make decisions to take action on. But after that part of the meeting is over and before the others go home, someone in that group is sharing either their own struggle in relationships and marriage or someone else's. And so that person is tapping in to the wisdom of the others at the table on a subject that wasn't on the agenda. And so the two things I see here, you have a business meeting, and I've chaired meetings, I can't count how many. And there is a responsibility to keep the meeting on track, a business meeting, to find a solution, to discuss the options, and find a good way forward. That is what this meeting, if I understand it right, correctly, that's what this meeting started out as, and that's what it was for. But you know how it is. We get the talking about various things. And if it happens once and it goes till 10:30 talking about this, that's understandable. But if it happens on a regular basis, I would recommend we have a business meeting and it's business only. If you want to talk about this other thing, let's schedule a different time for that. Because it seems like the men around that table are being sabotaged in a sense to get their input. I would assume it's a good request. It's a good endeavor. But some men like to go to bed at 8:30 and others don't mind going to bed at 10:30. And so to be respectful of people's times is very important. Where is the balance between providing leadership to maintain a schedule and being open and having time to listen? That takes wisdom that only God can give. But I see two issues in this question. I don't know how the others see it here.
All right, comments from the rest of you?
I've spent considerable lot of my time sitting in meetings over the years. And it was an eye-opener this morning what Richie shared as far as structure of meetings and chairman responsibilities. And I can say this, I have great appreciation for some of the meetings I sit in on a regular basis at this time. And there's actually people in the audience here who are chairman and take part in these meetings. And I was greatly encouraged by the way we do things and it actually works. But with that said, I have also sat in meetings exactly as described, where we wasted 2 or 3 hours on bunny trails and completely irrelevant conversation, and then we scrambled to hit the topic in the last 5 minutes of the meeting. It's a complete waste of time. Somebody's not doing their job. So to avoid cases like that and have a chairman or a person appointed to be in charge and keep things on track just became very real to me after listening to Rich's topic today. I really appreciated that.
Any other comments? Thank you for that. And I do believe that it takes wisdom, especially for a chairman in a meeting. One solution that can be done is if an issue comes on the table that wasn't on the agenda, one option is to say, well, that's a good item. Good thing to consider. Let's write that down to discuss at our next meeting, and then have that on the agenda with time to hopefully get to the root of the problem. At the same time, it takes wisdom. Maybe if it's something sensitive and urgent, maybe there's time for to go a little later and dive into it while the person is open and has the courage to talk about it, depending on the situation. Okay, well, thank you again to the audience for submitting these questions. Thank you to you speakers for putting thought into answering these questions.